This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for business and IT professionals. This episode is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. This is episode 61 with Taz Gray. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and for this episode, I'm joined by Taz Gray. Welcome, Taz.
Thanks, Robert. How are you going?
Not too bad. Good to see that you're prepared to do a little bit of a podcast on a weekend. So how's that panning out for you?
Oh, well, so far, so good. It's got to put in the extra hours, I think.
Doing a podcast on a weekend when it's nice and quiet and you can get away from those ringing phones. So,
absolutely.
What we probably need to do to give people a bit of background is get you to introduce yourself, your business, and what you do during the week. So if you could do that for us, that'd be great.
Sure. So I've got a business called Axiom IT, and we're IT consultants. Been around about 4 years. Started out doing the traditional IT support managed service and very quickly jumped on the Office 365 train. So since then, we've just spent a lot of time looking at how we can use Office 365 implemented in our customers' businesses, and that's sort of where we're at now.
You're based out of Melbourne?
We're based in Melbourne, that's right.
And do you have any sort of verticals or any particular clients that you've focused on?
Not really. We're very broad in our client base. We've got all kinds of industries, which is good. I think that keeps it interesting for us, so I enjoy that.
And how long has the business been going for?
Under the name Axiom IT, around a year and a half. Prior to that, we had a different name, TNL IT Solutions, so we rebranded and sort of branded around the Microsoft Cloud side of things, and it's been going well.
Why did you see the Microsoft Cloud? Why did you want to focus around the Microsoft Cloud? Was that a natural transition from the Microsoft on-prem, or, you know, was there another decision in there?
No, I came from a Microsoft development background, so I was a .NET developer and focusing on web development. So I could see that, I guess, the transition coming perhaps a bit more. Or I could see it more so than the guys who were rolling out servers and doing all that sort of stuff. And knowing that that was the way things were going and seeing other products in the market like Dropbox and Google, what they were doing, I just felt that, yeah, this was a good way to go, because it certainly is the future. And as it turns out, I think that was a good call.
Okay, so obviously you've gone down that path and you've started implementing Office 365. For customers, I mean, what's been your general experience with the product over the time period that we've known Office 365?
Overall, it's been very good. We primarily use it for the email. We have looked and we have implemented the OneDrive solution in a couple of businesses with varying degrees of success.
What we'll be talking about shortly, but anyway.
Okay, so I won't go into that any further. But yeah, mainly for email, having the hosted Exchange component has been really the thing that's pushed a lot of people onto it, and we find that works exceptionally well.
So, I mean, when you implement it for customers, are they asking for it? Or are they just you're recommending it? Do they have any issues around the Office 365, especially the email, once they are on board with the platform? I mean, they're generally taking to it naturally, or how are you finding that?
Yeah, no. Look, majority of our customers that we've put onto Office 365 have already been looking for Office 365. So the marketing that Microsoft are doing is obviously quite effective, because people know about it and they're just unsure how to get it. So we find, and that could be a combination of our own marketing, but they come to us already educated on the product, maybe have a few questions here and there, how does this work? And then once we sort of answer those questions, they're pretty keen to jump on board. No real issues with it at all, to be honest. I don't know of any businesses that have had any difficulty in our experience. So
no, look, and I think that that's the general thing. If you look at it the vast majority of function that it provides is doing exactly what customers need. It's removing some of the onus on having on-premise email. And again, look at where all the email solutions are. You really probably don't want your email on-premise. And basically for dial tone email, which was of business grade, I think it's a fantastic solution. And for many IT providers, it's a great way to transition into the cloud from maybe an on-premise solution like Small Business Server or some other version of Exchange on-premise. So that's the easy step. I think the vast majority of people are doing it. The big challenge probably is the thing that I see is moving customers to the storage solution in Office 365, which is SharePoint. So SharePoint is a very different product from what many businesses, small businesses are used to. It's not necessarily a files and folders solution simply.
No, definitely.
And I think that's the big challenge. So you're moving from something which is files and folders to something which is a collaboration tool, in my words, and that can be a shock or that can be a big change for a lot of customers. I mean, what's your experience? Are you implementing the files, the system in the cloud for the customers, or are you remaining on premise for the time being? I mean, how's the SharePoint style adoption going for you?
Yes, with the smaller business clients, we haven't really moved them onto SharePoint or with OneDrive for Business. We've just found that if they're used to working out of folders, it's very hard to move them away from that. Where we've had success with this is businesses who have grown to a point where those file shares on their local network are no longer meeting the needs of the business. And they're ready for SharePoint, in which case SharePoint Online then becomes a great tool. So
So when you're talking about growing beyond that, what's the example? What have they grown beyond? What features or functions do you find they need?
well, they want things like they want version control, they want to be able to do things like build workflows and a whole variety of things, I suppose, but build intranet sites. We had one client who they were going through an ISO 9001 certification process, and they had to implement what was called an IMS system, and that needed to be a cloud-based file system that they could give people access to different levels of documents. But depending on where they sat in the business, they could only see specific things. And it had to be accessible by everyone in the company, and their staff are distributed across Australia and New Zealand. So having that set up on a local file share just wasn't going to work. Obviously, SharePoint was a great solution there, so we rolled it in.
And how are you finding that? Is it a major retraining for customers to use SharePoint, or do those that obviously are keen to adopt it or need that functionality, they move to it and they understand it? I mean, has it been a difficult transition from files and folders to a SharePoint solution from the customer's point of view? Do you find that the ones who are using it get it, or is a lot of training involved, or is there some resistance that the product is creating because it is so different?
No, look, we haven't had any resistance really. I think there is a little bit of a learning curve, and certainly even myself, I found that it was a shift in thinking, I guess, getting your head around the way SharePoint works. But once you're on board with that, I don't think there's any difficulty at all. So, I guess if they're looking to replace the file system with SharePoint, then definitely that creates problems because the expectation is not right from the beginning. But if they're looking at SharePoint as a separate system with and looking to achieve different things with it, then I don't think there's ever an issue.
So yeah, I think the key to it, and in my experience, is that unfortunately a lot of resellers aren't skilled or haven't got enough experience using SharePoint, and they basically drag and drop a large, document folder network share into a single document library in SharePoint, and then run out the door and leave the customer to their own devices. And that can be a very frustrating experience because there are limitations in SharePoint how many files you can view in SharePoint at a time, how many you can synchronize, and it is a different structure. And without a little bit of training up front, it does make that a major challenge. So
Absolutely.
in SharePoint, for those who don't know, we typically have an Office 365. We have two, I suppose, separate environments. One is what's called a team site. So a team site is designed, obviously for groups of people to collaborate together. So the way to think about that is if you are working on a project that involves multiple people interacting with documents, calendars, contacts, any sort of content, then you put it in a public or a team area called a team site. Microsoft also has a second area called OneDrive for Business. Now, OneDrive for Business is provisioned at the moment for as 1 terabyte for every single user who signs in to Office 365, and they have just recently announced they're scaling that up to infinite OneDrive storage for users. So we've got two different areas to store information. One, we've got a team site, and the second one, we've got OneDrive for Business, which is generally aimed at being a user's personal storage location for the files that they are working on themselves and normally don't need to share all of them with other members in their team or outside. I mean, in your experience, Taz, are you finding a confusion between OneDrive and team sites, and you know, can we users able to see differentiation? Are they using them in the correct way, I suppose, like I just spoke, or are they using OneDrive for Business as a great dumping ground because it's got so much space?
Look, to be honest, Robert, I couldn't really comment too much on that because we haven't really had many customers who are using the personal storage space. Where we have implemented SharePoint, they will use the team sites or project site or whatever the case may be, and I haven't experienced too much confusion from our customers around that, but I can certainly see where there would be confusion. And again, from OneDrive for Business to just the regular OneDrive even creates confusion for people. So there is certainly some confusion out there. Once you get your head around it, of course, it all makes a lot of sense. But yeah, it does take a while, I guess, to really understand what's going on there.
So, I mean, in simple terms, what we've got there, we have a OneDrive product, which is basically web storage. For those who don't know, we have a OneDrive consumer, which is just called simply OneDrive. That you can sign up for free. You get 7 gigs of storage included, and that, again, is also being scaled up to being infinite storage. So now you get OneDrive Personal, which is typically linked to a Microsoft account, but it is free. We'll give you unlimited web storage through the Microsoft servers, no cost to do that, integrated with Windows 8, mobile phones, all that sort of stuff. But you also have a OneDrive for Business. Now, OneDrive for Business is included in each Office 365 package. Typically, every suite that you have normally has OneDrive for Business, and it provides potentially now, going forward again, unlimited space. Now, so you have a business and a consumer version, and that then has, they are actually built on two completely different technologies. So the one in Office 365, the Office OneDrive for Business, is built on SharePoint, and at this point in time, like I said, it's currently 1 terabyte for most users. And it can be scaled. It's going to be scaled up to infinite storage. So, the messaging that I'm seeing from Microsoft is they're obviously working very hard on OneDrive. They're scaling that up to infinite storage, but they're sort of leaving team sites behind. So, team sites out of the box, you get 10 gigabytes of storage for starting, and then you get 0.5 gig for each additional licensed user. So, if you've got 10 users, you get the 10 gigs to start plus 0.5 gig for those 10 users in total, which is 5 gigs, so you get 15 gigs in total for your team mm-hmm. site. Now, obviously, the difference between 15 gig and 1 terabyte times 10 for every user is a big difference in storage capacity, and I've seen that creating confusion. I mean, what's your feeling on the whole OneDrive now infinite, OneDrive for Business now infinite storage, where team sites are still 10 gig?
Well, look, I think the unlimited storage is really more of a marketing strategy than anything else, because I can't imagine why anyone would ever need that much storage of personal documents, particularly in the workplace. For a consumer product, I can understand why it's useful to store your photos and things like that, but you know, most businesses who are using SharePoint correctly as a document repository, they're not going to need a huge amount of storage, I wouldn't think, unless we're talking about very large businesses that have been around for a very long time. So my feeling is that the storage is, we haven't really seen an issue. And then when we have needed extra storage, it's very cheap, so it's not really a problem, especially when you weigh it up against like the cost of, you know, local storage, buying servers, hard drives, or a NAS or whatever the case may be, and then the upkeep of having that in your office.
I mean, you're not seeing customers, or you're not seeing things out there where people say, "Oh, well, OneDrive is unlimited storage. I'm going to drag my, 15 gigs of server storage into OneDrive, which is unlimited, and then I can turn off my server and I don't need to have any local storage at all."
Well, fortunately, in our case, our clients will probably speak to us before making a bold move like that, and where we would sort of stop them. So I haven't actually seen that happen, but I imagine that there would be people who would do that, and that I can only imagine the problems that must create. Or
Well, I think I'm seeing that as a very common theme. I'm seeing a lot of people seeing the infinite storage now in OneDrive for Business, and this belief that they can basically, copy all their files up to OneDrive, and then they're going to get the same functionality as they have on premise, and potentially the same speed. And their motivation typically is price based to remove the need to have a local store as a local server. But obviously, in your case, you control that, and you again, are not advocating a complete drag and drop of all the files up to SharePoint. It's a staged migration, which is the right way to do it. But
absolutely.
unfortunately, the way I see it, and a lot of customers I see, and especially I think to me, Microsoft's messaging at the moment seems to be about, OneDrive is the one location for all your files, whether that's, gigabytes and gigabytes of stuff. And there's not a lot of guidance on the fact that you should obviously go in there, look at the files, break them up, break up your structure, do your document libraries, and do it correctly. I mean, you're obviously doing that with your clients, which is giving you the great result, which is the right way to do it. But in general, would you sort of, agree that Microsoft's message seems to be about, look, just get it to the cloud sort of thing, get it to OneDrive?
Yeah, I think there's something even bigger going on here, which you would know about, of course, Robert. And it feels like a bit of a race going on right now between OneDrive, Google Drive, and Dropbox, and they're just trying to get market share. So it's, go out, tell everyone how great this product is. But I guess they skip over, and this is not just Microsoft, but everyone, they skip over the more important minor details, I would say. So people get excited by a large amount of storage, but they don't, I guess, think about the fact that this is cloud storage, it's not local storage, so it's going to behave a little bit differently. And yeah, so I guess it's just marketing taking over, in my opinion.
Well, you're right. I think there is a grab for land, there is a grab for mind space, and obviously land in the cloud space. Because once people get their terabytes and terabytes of data up into the cloud, it's unlikely they're going to move to somewhere else, because it is a fairly painful problem of getting your stuff up
Absolutely.
there. So bandwidth is always a challenge. But I think that doing that, would cause more frustration, because clients aren't perhaps being made aware of, obviously, the bandwidth challenges firstly, but also some of the major differences in the way that, like I said, the competing products even work and how they manage documents. So, I
Yeah,
mean,
and I would also think that a lot of consumer expectation has been set by the way Dropbox works, which does have a very simple sync tool. So people come to OneDrive with that expectation, and it's often is not the case that it works in the same way. So I believe that plays a big part in it.
yeah, and I think you're right. I think Dropbox is so ubiquitous that, and it's obviously a free thing that people put on their system. And I don't know about you, but in a lot of businesses you come into, you see Dropbox everywhere. So when Dropbox is installed on all these machines, bypassing the corporate policies, it's a good indication they're looking for a collaboration tool. But again, you're right, that creates that expectation. I mean, are you seeing, a lot of Dropbox out there because custom end users are becoming frustrated they can't share files?
Look, in some cases we do see, yeah, Dropbox being used, and but often, I guess, maybe in much smaller businesses where there's no one keeping an eye on this stuff. So I mean, it does have its place, certainly for certain types of businesses. It makes it very handy to access things all over the place, and yeah, we do see a bit of it. But they're typically not doing a lot with it. They're storing basic data in there. If they were putting important information in, obviously, then that would be concerning. So yeah, but it's certainly prominent. It's all over the place, and it comes from that consumer end where people are using it in their personal lives, and they just think, well, why wouldn't we use it at work? Not thinking through, obviously, the implications of that.
Yeah, and I think that, again, because it's such an easy tool and because it's so ubiquitous on all the devices, I think that's what obviously makes it use, and they may use it at home. And I think when you look at the OneDrive solution, which is aimed at a similar market, and unfortunately there's a little bit more friction involved to get the same sort of, sharing experience. So, I mean, SharePoint has a lot of fantastic options in there, but from an end user's point, without training, it can be very confusing for them. How files are arranged, the document libraries, the views. When you move clients' data into something like SharePoint, do you take their existing file structure from a network share, or do you, for example, flatten that and maybe use something like the metadata to highlight the data? I mean, what's the sort of migration strategy? Do you try and get it exactly the same to ease the pain, or do you take that opportunity to actually, rework the data and maximize it more for what the end user is trying to achieve?
No, we would typically have a meeting to discuss, I guess, the best strategy. And often, file shares were set up when a business was first started, and that could be 5, 10 years ago, and things change, but perhaps the structure of the file shares haven't. So it creates a good opportunity, I guess, to sit down and review what they're actually doing and the way things are structured, so that quite often there is a better way of doing it and structuring things. So we use that as an opportunity to find out what that is, and then we implement that.
Yeah, and I mean, are you finding that obviously the clients that you're dealing with who know you would obviously work with that, but if you're bringing new clients on board, are they open to that sort of thing, or are they saying, look, I just want to move it up, I want to keep things the same, everybody knows where the documents are in P colon users blah 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 in this folder structure? I mean, again, how are you finding that sort of approach when you are bringing on new customers?
No, I would, in that situation, I would just wouldn't do it. I've tried doing that before, and it's just led to all kinds of problems. And it's a situation now that I just won't get involved in, just because I just don't believe it works.
Okay, so obviously I think that's the key thing, but in a lot of cases, if you've got users who want to do that, who want to move to the cloud, who want to get all their data up there, I mean, what's your recommendation for people who might already be in that boat or are facing customers with that? I mean, it may not be, you can't really say, look, we can't do this. I mean, is it a process that needs to go through it for every client in every situation?
Yeah, I think, well, I guess, yeah, if someone's is determined to do it that way, then we will try to talk them out of it, and then we end up in a better situation. If they're not willing to do that, then it's kind of, well, you're on your own, or we look at another solution.
And what would be a, in your experience, what a solution that would work or that you're finding success with?
Well, I find that if people are prepared to pay the extra, then Dropbox is a better solution for structuring things that way. It does still have limitations, but I think that's the better way to go.
Okay, so obviously one of the strengths of Dropbox is its local synchronization tools onto a Windows desktop. So we put on a desktop client, point it at Dropbox in the cloud, and it basically synchronizes or copies the data onto every workstation. And that works very, very well and has worked well for many years. Now, OneDrive for Business has a similar solution, but at this stage it's probably not as robust as the Dropbox option. I mean, what are you finding out there? Are people wanting to synchronize all their data, or are you able to basically help them understand that they should only probably synchronize the stuff that they need to work with offline?
Look, yeah, where possible, synchronize all the data, but if there are things that are not accessed very often that take up a large amount of space, then definitely, yeah, we'll use a selective sync feature in Dropbox, and that can save a lot of bandwidth and local hard drive space. So it's yeah, I guess treated on a case-by-case basis, but typically we would sync the whole thing down, and then if we resolve the issues from there, I suppose, as they arise.
I mean, what sort of volume of data or size of your data? What's the largest sort of synchronizing that you're doing with OneDrive for Business?
I think the largest we've probably done would be around 200, 200 gig, I'd say, something like
And with the OneDrive for Business sync client.
that. Oh, sorry, Robert, I thought you said Dropbox for Business. No, with OneDrive, we've found that it's better to keep it much smaller than that. So
your experience, what's much smaller than that? What's a number?
A couple of hundred meg is probably, I
Yeah,
wouldn't feel.
my experience has been that you start to get issues when you get over the 2 gig mark with the OneDrive for Business. So I think you probably agree with me in saying that it's probably not robust to do the 200 gigs like Dropbox is able to do.
Absolutely not. So
So part of that is, like you said, you mentioned going into the client and saying, look, do you really need to synchronize everything? So typically what I see in business I consult to is they say, look, we want to move everything from our file server, our 15 gig, to the cloud. We want to put it all in OneDrive for Business because OneDrive for Business is infinite now. And then they say, okay, now with that up in the cloud, we don't trust the cloud. We want to sync everything back to every desktop because we want to be able to have local access to our files. And obviously that's not a very smart strategy because you're copying 15 gig up once and then you're copying 15 gig up potentially down to every desktop again, and it doesn't make a lot of sense when you think about it. But that seems to be the mentality out there for people who aren't going through a structured process like you are. So again, the important thing to get across to people who are using OneDrive or who are helping customers implement OneDrive is part of the strategy needs to be is to go to them and say, look, what information do you really need synchronized to your desktop or accessing that quickly or that conveniently? And generally, that's not all of the data. And let's do a much smaller subset. And that works quite well, works really well, is quick, functional, but does require the client, again, to put some thought into the way their data is structured and how they want to arrange it to achieve that local sync. I mean, is that a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, look, working out of the browser is something that people are not used to doing when it comes to opening documents and that kind of thing. So there is a lot of demand for the synchronization side of things. So, and I think your approach is very good there, that you just sync what's required and don't do the rest, because otherwise you can get into a mess and you do get synchronization issues from time to time, which can be a real headache to sort out. So,
Yeah,
and
the way that I like to define it is sync hell. I mean, once the thing gets out of sync, it's like any synchronization product. I mean, the resolution is, delete the cache and resync everything, which is a very, very painful process. So the less you have to sync, the quicker the pain will be over generally.
yeah, absolutely. And I guess if you've kept your document library small, it certainly eases that process because you're not bringing down the whole data set in one go. So that's certainly another reason just to break things up into small chunks.
And when you do SharePoint or OneDrive, do you keep the file? Most customers arrange their file system, storage system with files and folders and subfolders and whatever. If the customer's got that structure, do you keep that structure in a document library, or would you convert those folders to metadata or tagging? So effectively, it makes it a much flatter structure, and they can filter and sort based on that additional metadata.
No, we haven't really delved into that side of it yet, because we haven't sort of seen the need with any of our clients. But it's excuse me, something that we'll definitely be looking at in the future, because I'm sure it's very powerful.
I think part of it too is the biggest challenge is that, as you mentioned up front, is you've got to get your head around SharePoint, and unfortunately, that does require some investment in time. I'm lucky; I've done it for years and years and years, and always, spruiked the product as being a great solution. But I think there are a lot of resellers out there who still need to come to grips with some basics of SharePoint, and that would make their lives much easier. And I think it, unfortunately, I see it as a product that many are very afraid of because they just don't understand it. And obviously, you've invested some time to come up to speed, and I assume that you guys are also using it internally to get that sort of experience. Is that really the secret to helping customers? Is obviously to use it yourself or spend some time learning the product so that you know how it can be implemented.
Oh, absolutely. You need to start using it in your own business. And I recall hearing you say that quite some time ago, and that may have contributed to us getting on board. So it's definitely something you need to do. And then, of course, you need to once I guess once you have that understanding about what SharePoint does and what it can do, when you go to that next client meeting where they're asking you for something, immediately a light bulb goes off in your head and you think, right, SharePoint's the answer for that. So it's definitely, there is quite a bit of an investment in time. I certainly found that at the start it was slow going, but once you get a bit of momentum, it's definitely you start to feel like it's been a worthwhile experience. And then, of course, going into a client and then rolling it out for them, that's when you really get that satisfaction of like, okay, this has been a worthwhile investment of my time, and it's going to help my business, and it's also going to help my client's business. So it really is a win-win. But I can certainly see why some of the more traditional IT businesses haven't looked at it, I guess, because they haven't needed to. But I think now we're approaching a time where, you know, the serverless business is becoming more and more common, in my opinion, and particularly in the startup space, that they don't want to buy hardware. They don't want that. And the benefits of the cloud products are just far greater than anything you could do on site. So you really need to get on board with this, is my opinion. And I think you might agree.
Well, I mean, obviously I do because, like I said, I abandoned those servers a long time ago. But the SharePoint thing, I think, is the key here, especially in the Microsoft world. I mean, SharePoint's been around since before Y2K, so it's been around for a long, long time. We've seen it initially with the Small Business Server product and CompanyWeb, and unfortunately, not a lot of resellers, you know, were involved in that and took advantage of that. And now, basically, with the move to Office 365, SharePoint is one of the key services that are provided through that. And unfortunately, the level of knowledge is very low, and that then makes frustration for obviously the reseller and also the end user when it comes to implementing it. So my general advice is the best way to get on to speed with it or get on board is that you need it to come up with a project that you can work with. Now, whether that project is within your business, so maybe you want to create a wiki library or a knowledge base for your business to capture information, you know, go and try and do that or work through that example in SharePoint. And again, it's not going to be three clicks and you're done and it's working fantastically. It's going to take some time and investment. Now, the other way that you can approach that, which I think is very successful and has worked for myself as well, is that you can go out and look for a not-for-profit. So maybe it's your kids' soccer team or some association not-for-profit you're involved with. They have a need to organize documents, share information, calendars, contacts, whatnot. The ability to implement something simple in SharePoint for them, doing it on a pro bono basis, and you can do it out of your own tenant generally, if you're a reseller, then will give you that experience to grow in the product. So I think at the end of the day, yes, you need to use it. The two opportunities are within your own business or potentially for some not-for-profit that you work with. I think they're the two big opportunities to take advantage of.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And look, we moved our file shares up to SharePoint, and we made the mistake of just dropping everything in, and that was when we we learned very quickly that's not the way to do things in SharePoint. So it was a good experience for us to make that mistake in our business before we took it to a client and tried to do that, and that would have been all kinds of headaches. So yeah, it's definitely the way to go. I wouldn't feel comfortable going out and rolling it out to someone had I not had that experience first. So I think that's, yeah, very good advice.
So I think that the second thing is obviously, you know, everybody can do email or everybody's familiar with IT resellers, email and Exchange. I think the next step up beyond that is the SharePoint piece because I think you would probably agree that the SharePoint, sorry, the email migrations are fast becoming a commodity and can be done with basically the press of a button and a PowerShell script to do everything. So there's not a lot of value to be added there. But in the SharePoint space, there is a lot of potential there to add value to obviously getting it up into the space, but also building solutions around that.
Oh, definitely. I think the email migration is really, you know, if it hasn't already, it will become the loss leader to getting in and doing the SharePoint stuff because that's where the real consulting happens and that's where the money's to be made, I believe.
And part of that means that you need to obviously skill up in SharePoint. You need to transform the business a bit to move from being someone who just moves emails backwards and forwards, someone who migrates documents backwards and forwards. You obviously need to be more involved in that. And part of that means understanding the product, which typically means using your own business. So
Definitely. And I also think that the role of the person who does that now has changed from one of a technical role to more of an analyst kind of role. So there is a mix of technical and business analytical skills that come together there to really make that product work well. So it's yes, we're moving into different territory, I believe.
So, I mean, would you? I mean, from your point of view, what you've seen, obviously, the investment you've made in learning the SharePoint, implementing, putting in your business, are you getting ROI for that investment you've made?
Yeah, I think so. It's it hasn't changed the way I work too much, but it's given me the knowledge to go out and sell it to other businesses. So that's where I see the ROI, is the learning.
Yeah, and I think again, it looks very daunting at first, but again, if there are plenty of tools, there are plenty of options out there, and people to speak to it, and you don't have to do it to the nth degree. Again, you just need to dip your toe in, I think, initially to get a feel for it. And I think that's relatively easy to do. But the key to it is if you want to do that, don't just open up a blank SharePoint site and say, okay, well, I want to learn SharePoint. I think you need to approach it a bit like you approach Excel or something like. I have a problem that I need to solve. How do I solve it with this tool is the best way to approach it.
Definitely. I just don't think you can do it any other way, to be honest. You need that issue or that problem to overcome. Otherwise, it's just you're just playing, really.
And I think that gives you, like I said, and moving forward in the world that we see with SharePoint being so important, it's going to be an essential skill because eventually when customers get beyond their emails, they're going to need to do sharing. And I think the other thing to look at is down the track is that the millennials, the next generation of workers, the people who are coming into the workforce now, really don't use emails to communicate. You look at the kids of today, they're using text messaging, they're using Facebook and social media. They're quite happy for everything to be public. They don't need to silo everything into something like an email system. So that's going to mean a major change in the way things are happening, and SharePoint and Yammer and things like that are ahead of the curve, and now's the time to get into that because the demand is only going to grow for businesses who want to achieve that. So, I mean, is that a fair call from where you sit?
Excuse me, without a doubt, Robert. I think, I think that excuse me, SharePoint integration with Yammer, or the Yammer integration into SharePoint, is definitely going to be something that still has a fair bit of, I guess, change in it. It's certainly not there yet, but I think that's going to be the future of how businesses communicate internally in many cases. I'm not sure, is that something you've had much experience with? Because it's certainly not my area of expertise when it comes to this. I'd be curious to know more about what you
Well, I
think.
think the thing is what we're seeing is the surprising thing for me is when I go out there these days is more and more businesses, especially larger businesses, have already been using Yammer for a long time. So the Fortune 500 companies, the big businesses have been using Yammer inside their business. Now, that's been brought into Office 365. That's being provided to all people that have a SharePoint license. So all of a sudden, you've now got this option to include Yammer. Now, aside from the product being available to all the users, you've got how to implement it. Now, many businesses today still work very traditionally in a very structured, a very regimented pyramid style scheme, and that does limit corporate communications between divisions, and also can create the situations where users of lower level employees are frustrated because they're not getting heard, their voice is not being they're not getting that same sort of feeling involvement with the company. So there are plenty of examples that are available on YouTube, and I can show people that point to the benefits that Yammer and being social is. But the biggest challenge is it's not a technical, like SharePoint, it's not a technical challenge generally. It's generally a culture change. There are so many businesses that just don't have that culture. So we worked with an intranet with a company. We set up some basic social collaboration stuff for two-way conversations, and the management came back and said, that's fantastic, but we want to turn off the fact that the users can contribute. We just want to broadcast out what's happening. We don't want them to actually contribute in a space that we're aiming for them to contribute on. And again, you sort of look at it and think, hang on, you're telling me you want to collaborate, but now you want to turn off the messaging from end users because you may be worried that they'll say something you don't like, or they may post something that's inappropriate. Again, I think it's a culture thing, and again, if you lead by example, if you set up the procedures, the policies, you implement it correctly, you get astronomical benefits. But so many businesses just see it, unfortunately, as well. This is going to mean, Facebook is going to come into my enterprise. All my users are going to spend all their day taking pictures of what they eat for lunch and putting it on Yammer, which is definitely not the case. I think it just gives users another tool. But like anything with SharePoint, with email, you have to show users and you have to say, look, this is the way we want you to use it in the business to improve. This is how you can use the tool to make your job easier. And I think left to their own devices, yes, that's what it's going to degenerate to. But that's where the businesses need to step up and have a bit of leadership and a bit of guidance, a bit of policy and say, look, you know, this is what we're going to do. And that means an opportunity, I think, for resellers to come in and provide that level of consultancy.
And so, Robert, how would you help those organizations drive that?
Well, I think part of it is again, it's sitting down and mapping out a strategy. It's sitting down and looking at it and saying, you know, guys, what are you trying to achieve with this, you know, being social? Are you trying to share information about, you know, what your organization does, policies and procedures? What actually are you trying to do? You're going to get feedback. And the strategy is always to start small. So again, just pick one thing. So maybe it's a message from the CEO. A very good example was a SharePoint site that was implemented by, you know, someone who gave a talk that I was attended. And they actually created a SharePoint intranet for the business, and they created a sub-area, sub-site, which was going to be for IT support. So the idea with that sub-site was that IT would upload videos, help documents, and information that users could browse and help them with their job. Now, that was going to be the lowest priority, and they were going to get back to it. So they built a skeleton and went off and finished the intranet. Now, what they found was when they came back, users had already found that IT site and users were already working with it and taking the information. But the most important thing that they didn't realize was users were helping other users within that area. So someone would come in and say, I've got an IT problem, I can't do this, and this. Then another user would jump in and answer that question. So,
oh wow, okay.
That's where the light bulb went off, and they sort of, hang on, we don't have to do anything. We just have to encourage this participation. So things like Yammer allow you to, for example, acknowledge people, give awards, recognize those people who contribute. So what they've found is implemented correctly, you actually get staff in there helping other staff, running the business, making suggestions, which you would never get through email. So again, this group sourcing is very, very powerful, but the fear for most management is they'll lose control. You know, their structure is very, you know, this is the edict, this is what we need to do, this is the policy. I think that people who understand social or brought up with social understand that I want to hear everything, I want to see what's going on. Yeah, sure, some of it's going to be, probably not what I'm after, and some of it may not be suitable, but you know what? The only way I'm going to find the gold is I'm going to have to dig through potentially a lot of dirt to get there. So used correctly, it is an extremely powerful tool. And the most important thing I see going forward for organizations is the engagement with people coming on board. So the struggle for most businesses today is to find good employees. Now, how do you get a good employee? You've got to provide them with an environment that they want to work in. So the best person in the world may come into the business, and if you're still using, you know, Windows Vista, slow machines, you block all the social tools, employees probably aren't going to last there because that's not their expectation of what they need to get their jobs done. So the way I see it is social is so important going forwards, because not only does it allow much more widespread sharing of information, but it also is the enablement tool that many good workers coming into the workforce are going to look for. So I think it's an absolute critical point. And again, Microsoft investing in Yammer, integrating it into SharePoint, moving that way with a lot of its own stuff is a true indication that that's what's going to happen down the track.
Yeah, look, I agree. I think there's plenty of potential there. And I do think the millennials particularly are going to be expecting that sort of thing in the workplace. So if you're looking to hire young people, then you definitely need to look at getting this into your business somehow, which with the cloud is obviously not that difficult anymore.
Well, again, because it's now provided with all the Office 365 suites, and the best way, obviously, for a reseller is to start using it themselves. Microsoft have a number of Yammer groups, Office 365 groups, that they can be involved with to get a feel for it. Yammer has a free option, so you can sign up with an email address today, no cost, and get involved with some of the public networks that are out there. Now, once you're familiar with that, you can then start looking and dragging it into your own business and help, you know, understand. And the big thing is for most businesses, it just eliminates the volume of emails that people have to go through every day. It's that's where you see the major productivity benefit almost immediately is most emails that people receive these days, when you think about it, 90% of them don't need to be private. You could happily share the information in that email with others. And unfortunately, the more traditional management styles are, no, I want to have all my emails in my inbox and I control them all because I can see them and click on them. But you know what? The reality is they never read them, so they're useless as much. So again, get it out in the public space, make it searchable, make it available to anybody to build on that knowledge and add their own, add that extra value to increase the value overall. And I think the smart organizations are the ones that will adopt that and change their mindset, change their culture to take advantage of that.
Yeah, definitely. And Robert, do you think, is there, what size business or what number of employees do you think something like Yammer becomes useful? I imagine if there's just two people sitting in a room together, it's probably not all that helpful.
But see, again,
Five, ten.
a lot of people come to me with that exactly that question, and they limit it. Now, what you've got to realize, in my opinion, is an organization is not bounded by the people that sit behind a desk and come into the office every day. An organization involves interactions with vendors, interaction with customers, interaction with all different people. Now, if you look at your Yammer network as just the two people sitting next to you in cubicles, yeah, that's limiting. But what about a Yammer network with those two people, plus other people and other businesses like them, other vendors, other customers that they all communicate together? So imagine a community board, for example, that you can come in and ask questions about your industry or your supplier. So I think that it does work for any business. If you're looking just to use it internally, then you are limiting it. In that
Okay.
respect, you're probably looking at more around geographic diversity. So if you have a business which is two people, but those two people don't work in the same office, Yammer will work for them as well. But if you have an office of five people and they're all more or less in the same room, maybe not. But again, at the end of the day, think about it this way. If those two people are in a business and they employ a third person, where does the third person go to find information about previous conversations, previous goings on?
That would be tricky, yeah.
It would be in somebody's email box, and you've got to forward it. And again, if it was all in Yammer, you could more or SharePoint, you could sit them down and say, "Look, do a search here. It'll pop up. Add to the thread. Go on. All this sort of thing." So, I think you can't limit it by numbers, and there's always an opportunity to implement, the social tools. But certainly, if you have an inward-looking organization where everybody's more or less in the same building and yell across a partition to each other, no, it doesn't have a use. But I think that is more a limiting belief rather than a limit of the technology.
So, Robert, with, for example, the SMB IT professionals mailing lists, maybe I'm not sure, do we need to explain what that is to the
So,
listeners,
yeah,
but.
at the end of the day, what that is basically a group of people who subscribe to an email list. So when you send an email to that list, it then sends a corresponding email to everybody who subscribed to that list so that everybody can see. So it's a public mailing list is the easy way to describe
Okay.
that for technical people.
Excellent. So that is that an example of something that could be easily moved into Yammer,
Yes,
in your
absolutely,
opinion?
in my opinion, because one, it gives you the visibility, allows you to search. The good thing about Yammer and being social is there's a mindset change here. People who just want emails, they want control of everything. They don't trust the fact that they might miss an email. They know the email's in there somewhere, and in theory, they can find it, but the reality is they never do. The difference is with Yammer is that in social is you have to trust the algorithm. The algorithm is making decisions on what is most relevant to you based on what you're doing, who you're interacting with, and that means a certain level of trust. So when you go to something like Facebook, Facebook has an algorithm in the back that surfaces the most relevant posts based on your previous activity. And that's exactly what Yammer does. So yeah, in my opinion, it has an absolute relevance here because it does cut through all the guff, allows you to ignore the stuff which you're not interested in, and I can go to it and get a quick summary potentially every day of what I need to have a look at. I've also got the ability to integrate it with emails. So if I still want emails, it can email me alerts, it can email me information. So it can still work in the old ways. But most
Okay.
importantly, if I'm a new member, a new person who comes in, I don't start with nothing. So if I come into an email list as a new person, I've got nothing until someone sends an email and it starts appearing in my inbox. But with Yammer, as soon as I'm able to access the network, I have access to everything I can see, plus everything that I can search for. And
Wow, okay.
at the end of the day, information is what we're after. The information is what the membership's about. Information's about the collective knowledge of all these people putting their experiences into a tool like Yammer so that later down the track they can search it. So what do most people do with the email lists? They let it accumulate in one big folder, and then when they need something, they go to that folder and do a search. They don't interact with it, they just use it as a knowledge repository.
Yeah, look, I know I've got a number of mailbox rules set up just to manage the flow of email that comes through that on a daily basis. So, and searching through Outlook is not the ideal way to search, that's for sure. So,
And I think the other thing too is the email is a one-to-one. You're relying on your email thing, and there are some benefits. Look, don't get me wrong, and for maybe doing quick scans, but what I see is the fact that a tool like Yammer would allow that knowledge transfer, the knowledge sharing, so much easier, and importantly, it would be a major enticement for others to come into the organisation because they can get immediate access to all that information. And the third thing is if you're looking to grow an organization or a business and you want to attract those millennials, these are the tools they expect. They expect to come in and have a social tool and have a Facebook style or LinkedIn experience. They don't expect to be using emails.
yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I do, at recently at the conference, someone was presenting there and they were talking about how they use their Facebook page as a way of making their business a compelling place to work. So I think, yeah, you're definitely right about that younger generation. They're going to look to your Facebook page probably before they look at your website, and you know that this is the expectation. And if, yeah, we're hiring younger people, we need to do all this stuff. So
And a part of
that's
it
it.
is you've got to bite the bullet, you've got to try it. But again, in limited respects, and again, it's not going to be, necessarily a simple matter to make this transition. But the important thing is nothing worthwhile generally is. So the sooner you start it, the sooner you start getting involved and doing this stuff and learning stuff like Yammer, and you'll begin to see the benefits. And I said the payoffs are astronomical because, going forward, we all probably know that it's not what you know, it's who you know. And if you've got a problem, what do most people do? They go and use a search engine. And someone's blog, someone's article, something somewhere, some tech article from Microsoft will be the solution.
Absolutely.
The quicker you can find that, the better you're able to do your job. And that's what's missing, I think, in a lot of these sort of email conversations. That's where social, really comes into its own.
Yeah, and look, I think the history is also an important point because it's just, I guess, you've just raised the point, and it's made me think when we joined, going back to the SMBIT professionals example, I only see what's come through since I've joined, and there was probably a lot of valuable information prior to that which I'm not privy to. So yeah, having that feed style set up where I can actually go back as far as I want without needing to store that in my mailbox, I do think that's definitely a better way of doing things.
And the other thing too with Yammer, you can create subgroups. So you could have a top level group, which is everybody. Then underneath, you could have, a discussion around a conference. You could have a discussion around a topic, a hardware vendor. You could have a specialist area. Again, it allows you to create this, community hall where everybody meets in maybe one room to discuss general stuff, but then goes off into side rooms or clusters in corners to talk about things which are relevant to them. And that information still is available to everyone. And Yammer can support things like file uploads. So again, if I upload a file, which may be a checklist, I can then not only download that, but I can follow that. So that means that when the author updates it, I get a notification that that has changed. And I can follow people, I can follow conversations. So again, when you start expanding out the social thing and the more stuff you tag, the more stuff you indicate that's of interest to you, the algorithm starts learning. And therefore, it becomes better and better and better and better at pushing you the information that's relevant. So, some of these large groups outside that Microsoft run have got 20, 30,000 members. I mean, they could be posting 100,000 messages a day, but I only see the top ones based on the interactions I have and the interests I've accumulated using those groups. And that's where the importance is, and part of it is you've just got to trust the algorithm. If you want to go back through it all, you can, but today's a fire hose. No matter where you turn, there is so much information, and you do have to allow the algorithm to make some intelligent decisions for you.
So, and if you do find yourself in a situation where you know information's come through, but you're not seeing that, is there a way that you can actually go and get that information,
So
or are
what
you?
you've yeah in Yammer you've got the ability. Obviously they have the link which you see generally first up is called top, TOP. So that shows you what the algorithm thinks important to you. But next to top is all. So if you click on all, you'll get the fire hose. You'll get everything that's flowing through that organization.
I see. Okay.
So that's the difference between the two. Now, again, if you're missing something, but it's just too much. If you want to find something, you do a search. But the real way you do it is the way the world works today, it's all about influencers. You need to find the person of influence, the person of relevance who knows their stuff, who points you in the right direction, gives you the right information, and you follow them. And typically,
Yes.
you like Twitter, you find someone on Twitter who's putting out good stuff, you follow them, and you take from their feed. You can't see everything anymore. And over time, that may change. You may decide that that person isn't giving you good information as they used to, so you can unfollow them. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's the way we cultivate information.
Absolutely. And look, I find, my own personal interests that I do rely on Facebook to and LinkedIn to bring me the information that I need by following the right people, as you say. So it really just sounds like Yammer's bringing that same it's the same thing, I suppose you would say, but into the workplace.
Well, the
So
other thing too that Yammer gives you is the enterprise, you know, so it gives you the controls, it gives you the policies, it gives you the procedures, it gives you, so, you know, immediately someone leaves the organization and they no longer have a login in your business, they can't access the Yammer tool, that, you know, for whatever reason. So that information suddenly doesn't move out the door because they've still got, you know, all this stuff in their inbox saved.
yeah, and that's a really important thing too. And of course, with many cloud products that people sign up to, they don't realize that there is in the consumer space there that you don't get those kind of controls. So I guess we're moving away from Yammer here, but yeah, that's an important consideration. And
Well, that, again, that's part of the tool. That's part of, and bring it back to the OneDrive thing, because we will need to end off shortly. As interesting as that, we've diverged off here, but that's the difference between like OneDrive Consumer and OneDrive for Business. They may appear the same at a base level as doing storage, but it's the admin controls at the back end is the compliance issue. So, for example, OneDrive for Business now supports you know, data loss prevention (DLP), which means that you can put up a document, or soon be able to put up a document which is a template, like a fingerprint. And when people work with or try and send a document outside of SharePoint to an external party, the DLP will intercede and say, hang on, this document looks too much like this template, which I've been told is not to go outside the business. You will never get that with the consumer version, but OneDrive for Business has, you know, data loss prevention built into it. OneDrive for
Wow.
Business has the storage, for example, the way that it's secured, so every file within SharePoint is basically broken up or shredded into little components. Those components are then stored in different databases. They're encrypted with unique and different keys, and they're put in different locations in the data center and potentially geo-replicated all the way around the world. So, okay, that doesn't happen with OneDrive Consumer. This is the difference between the Yammer Enterprise, the OneDrive for Business, the SharePoint stuff you get with Office 365. It's business grade, and a lot of that is just kept behind the scenes, and Microsoft doesn't get a lot of kudos for it.
No, but yeah, but the thing is, as well, in my experience, Robert, I've found going back to Dropbox, people who are using the consumer version in their business, they don't realize the risk that they've actually opened up for themselves, that they can't actually block someone out when they leave. These are things that when you bring to their attention, they go, oh, okay, so that's why I have to pay
Correct.
for the business version.
And I
And
think, look, and part of that is, again, the resellers unfortunately haven't had their experience with those sort of products. And it's an easy thing to fix. It's a matter of just creating a checklist and said, you know, do you realize, are you aware, these are the differences, and just running through them and making the customer aware of them. But yeah, some of the low-level stuff we take for granted in the Office 365 business space is just so phenomenal, but it works so well we never see it. And again, it's like, well, hang on. People say I'm worried about the security and the data sovereign, you know, the data sovereignty issue, because I want the information on my server and my organization. You sort of go, well, hang on, your server's connected to the internet and it's not really patched and it's not updated and it's got bad passwords, versus a Microsoft data center with, you know, guards and dogs and all this encryption
barbed
and
wire.
barbed wire. And you sort of think, well, hang on, again, and the third thing you would say is, well, who really would want to look at your data? Is it really that in, you know? So I think it's, again, apples with apples. And I understand there's an emotional argument. I do understand that there are issues. But every day there is becoming a greater and greater difference between the enterprise-grade solutions and the consumer-grade solutions. Consumer-grade stuff, convenient, works really well, but it does that for a reason. And that's why it's free. And don't forget, as they say, if you're not paying for a product, you are the product at the end of the
Yeah, that's
day.
very true.
So do not overlook that, and that's especially true with a number of other vendors. So keep that in mind.
Absolutely good advice.
All right, well, I think what we need to do is we probably need to start winding this up because we don't want to go for too long. We'll have to obviously maybe defer this to a future podcast because I think we've covered a lot of great topics, and we did start out with the OneDrive thing, and we've moved into things like Yammer. So what we might do to end this episode off is, Taz, if you want to let people know how they can get in contact with you, how they can look at the information or get more information about your business, keep in touch with what you're doing, and maybe avail themselves of your services, how could they do that?
Oh, absolutely. Well, look, our website is AxiomIT, which is AxiomIT.com.au. And of course, I'm on LinkedIn. You can look me up, Tass Gray. They're probably the best ways to get in touch or send me an email just through to Taz@AxiomIT. That's TAS@AxiomIT.com.au. Get in
No
touch.
Twitter handle? Come on, get with the
Oh,
social.
I don't even know what it is, Robert.
Oh dear, I think we'll have to do a whole episode where we talk about social. All right.
I think so. Twitter's not my strong point at the moment.
Twitter's an amazing tool. Twitter's an amazing tool. So maybe we can do that for a future podcast. But
Oh,
we go on.
I was going to say, I've just looked it up. It's Tass Gray, @TassGray. So, if
Perfect.
you're on Twitter,
Perfect.
perfect.
All right, well, I'll put all those in the show notes. And again, thank everybody for listening into this episode. Hope you've got some valuable information. And the plan, hopefully, will be that we can get Taz back to talk about some more technical topics around the Office 365 space and the cloud space going forward. So if you're interested in hearing a topic on Office 365, Azure, cloud-based solutions, typically for business, we'd love to hear from you. My email address is director@ciaops.com. My Twitter handle is @directorcia. And all my contact details for all the other stuff is on the website, ciaops.com. But with that, I will take the opportunity to thank Taz for his time today and thank everybody for listening. And with that, I'll sign off from this episode of the Need to Know podcast. Thank you very much
Thanks,
for
Robert.
listening. This episode was brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.